Good morning, everyone. Hi. My story starts when I was, 10 years old. I decided that I wanted to be a pilot, and everything that I did from then forward was a mission to get into an aircraft. I was fortunate enough to be selected into the South African Air Force when I was 18, started my training, and was a military pilot for a while. I then moved into the commercial sphere of flying, became a commercial pilot flying for South African Airways, and that led me to a night in 1998 where I was on a freighter pairing, which meant that we flew during the night, so you would take off at 8 or 9 in the evening, you would fly freight across the country up and down all night, and then you would end up at a base and then pretty much spend the day in the hotel and then do the same thing the following night. Anyway, I ended up in Cape Town, where we lived, fortunately, at the time. And that was at about 3 o'clock, we landed in Cape Town. And I then headed home in my car. About two or three blocks from home, unfortunately, I came across four guys that decided that they wanted my car and everything that I had. This was quite a common thing, maybe still is a common thing in South Africa, that people get carjacked, hijacked. Back in those days, if you were carjacked, they generally took you, they put you in the boot, and you ended up on the beach somewhere where they would shoot you. And there were not kind of any survivors out of a carjacking scenario back then. When I was approached, there were four guys, two of them with guns, two remained in a different car, and they were adamant that I got into the boot of the car. And I just point blank refused. It was a built-up area. It was Main Road, Cape Town, which is a pedestrianized area, but it was 3 o'clock in the morning, so there was kind of nobody about. But I did say to them, listen, I'm not getting into the boot. If you're going to shoot me, you shoot me here. I'm not going anywhere in the boot with you. They relented and just hit me in the face with the butt of the gun and pushed me over into the passenger seat. And one drove my car, the other one got into the back of the car, and the car had an immobilizer. They couldn't get it going, and I said, okay, well, if you let me out, I'll get the car going, and then you can be on your way. And I put my hand on the door to kind of get out of the door, and the guy in the back shot the first shot off, which just nicked my ear and went through the windscreen. And I could just feel the blood running down my ear and onto my shirt, and it was pretty scary at that point. So I stayed in the car, got the car going, and we headed off. The whole time I tried to make a personal connection with them by chatting to them and just trying to, build the relationship that I was a person, that they wouldn't have to dispose of me in a kind of violent way. But for all my pleading, they just turned the radio up louder and louder and pushed my head under the dash. So there I stayed for however long it took us to get to an area called Hanover Park, which is on the Cape Flats. For any of you that have been to Cape Town, when the aircraft's coming to land, it's that kind of area. And we stopped in this residential area. It was July, so in South Africa that's winter time. And it was cold and it was raining. And the guys in the other car stopped behind us and they wanted anything that I had of value. So they took my wedding ring, my flight satchel, the bank cards that I had on me. They wanted the PIN numbers from the cards, which I gave them. They said that if the PIN numbers were inaccurate, they were going to kill me. I said, well, let's go to the ATM. We can draw the maximum amounts on the cards and then you can just leave me. They weren't interested in that. So the two in the other car took all the valuables and disappeared. And then we stayed in my car and we headed off. And the guy in the back then said, we're just going to find a place to kill you now. And I then said, well, you don't have anything to gain by killing me. Just unload me. You've got all the valuables. You've got my car. I'm not putting up a fight. Let's just be done with it. The guy driving said, no, we're just going to unload you. We're not going to shoot you. And 2 minutes later, the guy in the back said, no, we're going to kill you now. And so it became this kind of game that they were playing with me. I never thought that they would actually try and kill me. So we ended up next to this field, and the guy in the back pulled me out and threw me to the ground, and I kind of lay there waiting for them to disappear. And he took a shot at me, and the gun either misfired or he missed me. But it gave me a second to realize that they were trying to kill me. And I lifted up my left hand behind my head, and the next bullet went through my hand and into my head. And it went through my brain, ricocheted off the inside of my skull above my right ear, and then stopped behind my left eye. And I didn't lose consciousness, but they drove off thinking I was dead. I was able to sit up. I got kind of violently ill, but I was alive, and they were gone. And I then decided it's time to find help. So I tried to stand up, but I really struggled because my balance was, I just didn't have any balance. Every time I stood up, I fell down. I didn't feel any pain at all. There was a lot of adrenaline running through my body. I didn't actually even realize that I'd been shot at that point. So I kind of had a moment of clarity where I thought, you have to make a plan or else this isn't going to end well. And I found a fence, one of these kind of metal chain link fences, and I thought, well, I'm going to hold on to the fence and I'm going to walk in a direction until I can find some help, which is what I did. I ended up at a house where I knocked on the door, but it's a very dangerous area. The lady inside just told me to go away. She wasn't interested. I managed to find my way next door, and there was another lady, and her son was actually studying in Boston, and he was there for the holidays, and he said, I'm not opening the door, but I'll phone the police, I'll phone for an ambulance, and just wait outside. And I sat there for ages, and nothing happened, and I knocked on the door again and said that I was actually, at that point I realized that I had this big hole in the back of my head, and I said, listen, I'm actually going to die out here unless you do something. I'll pay you whatever you want to get me to a hospital. And he said, I'm not opening the door. Eventually, two policemen turned up in a pickup truck, and they were just confused at the sight of me in a pilot's uniform there with all of this blood, and they were debating, and I just climbed in the back of the pickup truck myself, and I said, just take me to a hospital. Hanover Park doesn't have a hospital, but it does have a trauma unit, and I ended up at the trauma unit with a nurse, and there I was able to say that I had private medical, give them Sandy's telephone number, and then I lost consciousness at that point. And I came to at the hospital, which was in Cape Town itself, and then Sandy was there. There was a surgeon on call called Roger Melville. He was a Christian, and Sandy was able to pray over his hands, and yeah, there was a lot of pain at that point. But I went into surgery, and there wasn't a lot that he could do apart from clean up the wound where there was bone fragment at the back of my head in the brain, and take out the bullet casing. But the bullet itself was very deep in my brain, and to get it out would have just risked doing more damage. So he left it there. I don't have a knuckle on this hand because this bone just took all of the velocity of the bullet. And so they put a pin in there, and that was a different surgeon that worked on my hand. The problem with a brain injury is that your brain expands when it gets hurt, and your skull constricts that expansion, and ultimately a lot of people die because of that. So they put a lot of little holes in my head called Richmond screws to relieve the pressure, and they put me into an induced coma for, I don't know, 4 or 5 days, and then there's not anything else that they can do except pray. And there was a lot of that going on. And then I woke up, or they gradually brought me out of the coma, and I moved from an IC unit into a normal ward. But I was only in hospital for just under 2 weeks, it's not a long time. And when your brain gets damaged, your brain doesn't regenerate cells, so the neurons try and find a different pathway around the damage, but you don't actually fully recover that damage. And so I've got epilepsy, so I take medication for that, which is very well controlled. I have lost a lot of vision on my left, so I don't see anybody sitting on this side when I look ahead, and I don't see the lectern when I look, so I kind of see in a box over here, which meant my flying career ended, and I'm not allowed to drive. But that's quite minor considering. In terms of where God was in all of this, we were part of an active home group and a good church, and I didn't even think about God at all in this. The terror, fear is too big. But he certainly was there. There were multiple miracles, I think. Being able to stay calm in the car when the guy shot at me and missed me initially, gave me that second. Being able to stay conscious and find help. Having a Christian, being able to perform the surgery. And unusually for South Africa, all four of the guys were arrested, caught, went to prison, went to trial. About 2 years later, I went back to testify. One of them was released. Three of them got good sentences. But not long after, those sentences were reduced by half. But the most important thing is that I was able to move on positively through the strength of God, and to forgive them. And that forgiveness is not something that they asked for, or that they showed remorse, which they didn't at all. But it is something that has allowed me to live a normal life. And I mean, that's the strongest thing, is being able to forgive when something terrible happens. Yeah, so that's it.
Let me pray for you. Lord, you're a God of miracles, and we've heard the miracles that you performed in Andre's life then. The miracle of being able to forgive those who are trying to kill him. And yet, Lord, I'm going to ask for another miracle in his life today. Lord, I pray that you would lift the trauma of this situation off of him. That he has released this to you. He's released this to us. This story of the God of miracles who is there even when we don't know or see him. That he answers prayers. I thank you that Andre is standing next to me now and able to have a job and continue with his wife and his kids. So, Lord, I pray right now you'd lift that trauma off of him and give him a peace that does pass understanding. In Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you.
Thanks. Could I just say one of those?
Yes, you may.
I actually had the easier part of those 7 or 8 traumatic days. My family,
and Sandy in particular, were the ones that suffered. So it's through their perseverance and persistence and continual prayer. I mean, there were people all over the world praying for me, being led from what Sandy was doing. So thank you.
Thank you. What a powerful testimony, isn't it? And perhaps sometimes we look back on our lives and it's like, I didn't even realize God was there. But thank you. And we are so glad you're still with us. So glad.